Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Sioux City Journal for Thursday, June 24th, 2021. I'm your volunteer reader, Amy B. I hope everybody's doing wonderfully today. Let's start out with the weather. Today, a high of 89 and a low of 68 and humid. On Friday, a little cooler, a high of 79 with a low of 62 and a probable thunderstorm. Saturday, a high of 74, a low of 60, and rain. Sunday, a high of 78, a low of 59, with probable afternoon thunderstorms. And Monday, a high of 81 and a low of 58, cloudy. And the sun will set today at 9:06 p.m. The sun will rise on Friday at 5:50 a.m. and set at 9:07 p.m. Now let's take a look at our front page stories. Siouxland seeks relief from hot, dry June. These days, Joe DeLong doesn't have much to worry about coming up with a conversation topic when he's out and about. I can't go anywhere without having a rainfall discussion with farmers, said DeLong, an Iowa State University Extension and Outreach field agronomist based in Lamar's. The hot, dry conditions Siouxland has baked in for much of June make us all wonder what's in store for the rest of the summer. June is typically Iowa's wettest month, but just 0.69 of an inch of rain has been recorded at Sioux Gateway Airport through Tuesday, 2.5 inches below normal. To make things worse, Sioux City has seen 11 days in which the temperature hit 90 degrees or more, with another 90-plus degree day forecast for Wednesday. Normal high temperature at this time of year is 83 degrees. Most of Siouxland has experienced similar conditions. Some areas have precipitation deficits as much as 12 to 16 inches, and the U.S. Drought Monitor map on June 17th placed most of Siouxland in moderate or even severe drought. In fact, 76% of Iowa is listed in drought, the state's most widespread drought since October 2013, state climatologist Justin Gleason said. The northwest corner of the state has missed out on a majority of widespread rainfall, Gleason said. It's led to dried out lawns, curling corn leaves, and towns and cities across the area considering issuing water use restrictions. Brad Putz, Sioux City's utilities director, said the city has not had formal discussions on implementing water restrictions. He urged residents to use water wisely by watering lawns during cooler times of the day and not leaving the hose running while washing the car. We just asked citizens to be cognizant of the drought conditions, Putz said. Of course, not everyone is opposed to the hot, dry spell. Attendance at Sioux City's three public swimming pools is almost twice what it was 2 years ago at this time. Pools didn't open until June 22nd last year because of COVID. Pools love the heat, that's for sure, Sioux City Recreation Supervisor John Byrne said. Hot weather, he said, keeps pools open and full, ensuring that lifeguards stay engaged during their watch. It also brings increased revenue for the city. DeJong will tell you farmers throughout the area worry about what the heat and drought will do to their bottom lines. Conditions thus far remind him of 2012, when the growing season started with little moisture stored in the soil and inadequate rainfall fell during the summer to replenish it. Many farmers saw reduced yields. If rain is limited the rest of June through July, a critical time for corn pollination, we're going to be in pretty tough shape, DeJong said. When DeJong took soil borings across the region on April 15th, soil moisture measured 5 to 10 inches deep. Crops have been able to subsist on rainfall received in April and May, but will soon begin tapping into those soil reserves soon, if they haven't already. We're kind of at risk at this point, DeJong said. We don't have the soil reserve we've had in the past. From now to September 15th, the area needs at least 9 to 10 inches of rain, spread out over July and August, DeJong said. Little or no rain in the next few weeks could result in significant crop loss. It didn't help matters on Tuesday night when rain finally fell, but was accompanied by hail that destroyed crops in some Plymouth County fields. The current conditions are curious, given that a year ago Iowa was coming out of the wettest two-year period since record-keeping began in 1872. That was followed by the 17th driest summer on record, and hasn't gotten much better. Gleason said a high-pressure system settled over the region in June, locking in hot air and blocking out much-needed rainfall. The dry soil, especially in northwest Iowa, gives little fuel to the atmosphere for thunderstorm development. The area needs storm activity soon to supply soil moisture that can lead to more favorable conditions for thunderstorms the rest of the summer. Fortunately, rainfall chances have improved for the next week or so, leading to some hope that the rest of the summer could at least see average rainfall totals. The next 10 to 14 days will give us an idea where we're headed in July and the rest of the summer months, Gleason said. But he and others concede the drought is likely with us for the long haul. It's going to take several wetter than average months to end it. Scott Winha, city manager in Sioux Center, which declared a water watch on June 8th, said it's going to take a lot of rain to replenish the aquifers from which the city draws its water. The water watch, at a minimum, will remain in effect for quite some time, Winha said. In the meantime, we'll all be anxiously watching the sky, looking for those big thunderheads to bring that much-desired rain and relief from the heat. County officials hope to tighten restrictions on wind farms in Woodbury County. Woodbury County officials have been working for the last year to create a more comprehensive and wind energy ordinance. During the Tuesday night Board of Supervisors meeting, a public meeting was held to discuss just such a proposed ordinance. The current zoning ordinance allows wind energy in agricultural preservation and general industrial zones, said David Gleiser, Director of Rural Economic Development. Within the current ordinance, those interested in constructing a wind turbine on a piece of property would fill out a proposal and pay $250. An abstract of the project is sent to property owners within 500 feet as a public notice, and the proposal is reviewed by the Planning and Zoning Commission. The last step is that a recommendation is sent to the Board of Adjustment. The Board of Adjustment ultimately has the decision, Gleiser said. Gleiser said the current zoning ordinance does not provide protections and assurances for private and public property. Some of the vulnerabilities in the current ordinance include insufficient setback distances to protect individual or public property, no recourse for damages to secondary roads network, no protections for the Los Hills, no assurance for the removal of decommissioned wind turbines. Current fees collected do not offset the time and resources expended to process review. So the proposed ordinance addresses all of the vulnerabilities. Instead of being a zoning ordinance, it would now be a standalone ordinance, putting the decision in the Board of Supervisors' hands. The proposed setback distances are 600 feet or 110% of total height from occupied residences, public road right-of-way, and public conservation areas, 600 feet from cemetery or city limits, 110% of total height from adjacent property lines, unoccupied non-residential buildings, and confinement feeding operation buildings, 1 mile from the Les Hills. Graham McGaffin, the Nature Conservancy of Iowa's Associate Director of Conservation and Les Hills Programs, says the Les Hills is an internationally significant area. There is only one other place in the world like the Les Hills, and it's in China. He said it is more important than ever to protect the area. Randy Wagner of Wayne, Nebraska, spoke to the board about his experiences with windmills near his home. He lives in the center of around 230 wind turbines. In 2016, he was contacted by a company that wanted to put a turbine on his property. At the time, the company said a setback distance of 1,500 feet was enough to not hear it. He considered it, but found out turbines negatively impact home value in a 2-mile radius and decided against it. Now he said there are 20 turbines in a 2-mile radius of his home and 4 within a mile. He says the noise is irritating. Wagner recommended having a minimum of a mile setback distance from a home. Gleiser expects that there will be additional changes throughout the next few weeks. Supervisor Matthew Ong said the proposed ordinance creates a more public and transparent process while protecting the Lost Hills. The board approved the first reading. The next two hearings are 4:45 p.m. on June 29th and 4:45 p.m. on July 6th, all in the Board of Supervisors meeting room in the basement of the courthouse. I didn't read you the mini editorial first thing, so we're going to do it right now. This one is written by Diane Bostick of Sioux City. She writes, "In order for our community members and our economy to thrive, getting more people vaccinated is the key. Are the Woodbury County movers and shakers willing to create a lottery to encourage the effort? It may well be worth every penny invested. MRHD awards $1.2 million in grants to nonprofits. The Missouri River Historical Development, Inc., MRHD, awarded grants totaling $1.2 million to 15 Woodbury County nonprofit organizations and governmental entities on Wednesday. The grants, ranging from $25,000 to $200,000, support MRHD's ongoing mission of enhancing the quality of life for all people who live in or serve Woodbury County," said Stacy Harmelink, MRHD president. The grants were announced at a special grants award ceremony at the Betty Strong Encounter Center. The committee reviewed dozens of grant applications before recommending funding for this year's 15 recipient organizations. The committee's recommendations received approval from MRHD's full board of directors. Grants were awarded in 5 categories. Economic development, community improvement, and tourism grants totaled $245,000 and went to the Anthon Community Center expansion of facility, $200,000. Washita Community Fire Department Light Rescue Brush Truck, $45,000. Human Services and Health Services grants totaled $381,245 and went to Camp High Hopes, mechanical and electrical work in gymnasium, $150,000. Goodwill of the Great Plains, remodel day services facility, $79,865. Ronald McDonald House Charities of Siouxland, mini expansion of first floor, $120,000. Catholic Charities of the Diocese of Sioux City, front entrance security and ADA upgrade, $31,380. Civic, public, patriotic, charitable, and religious grants totaled $366,452 and went to Mount Zion Missionary Baptist Church, structural and foundation repairs, $38,064. Sunnybrook Hope Center, new delivery truck, $56,250. Siouxland Humane Society, new vehicle for services and programs, $25,000. Westminster Presbyterian Church, stock the Morningside Neighborhood Food Pantry, $25,000. Danbury United Methodist Church, replace sidewalk and driveway, $22,138. Sacred Heart Catholic Church, build new parish hall, $150,000. St. Luke Evangelical Lutheran Church, repair and restore 1968 pipe organ, $50,000. Leisure, cultural, and historical grants totaled $27,000 and went to the Siouxland Pickleball Association for enhancements to Riverside pickleball courts. Education totaled $182,915 and went to Woodbury Central Community Schools in Mobile for a middle school gymnasium remodel. Wednesday's distributions bring MRHD's total contributions to Woodbury County nonprofit organizations and governmental entities to more than $42 million since 1994. An additional $800,000 has been pledged to the Sioux City Riverfront Project, bringing MRHD's total impact to more than $43 million. A nonprofit organization, MRHD has the license to conduct gaming in Woodbury County. Hard Rock Hotel and Casino Sioux City has the license to operate gaming in Woodbury County. MRHD's special grants provide much-needed funding to Woodbury County nonprofits and governmental entities that are making a difference in thousands of people's lives, Harmelink said. We thank Hard Rock Hotel and Casino, the source of this funding. Since 1994, a major MRHD contributions have gone to the City of Correctionville, Boys and Girls Home and Family Services, Food Bank of Siouxland, City of Mobile, Bishop Helam High School, Center for Siouxland, Unity Point St. Luke's, Mercy One Siouxland Medical, and Mary Treglia Community House. MRHD's funding for the Sioux City Lewis and Clark Interpretive Center totals $4 million. MRHD also built the adjoining Betty Strong Encounter Center at a cost of $3.6 million. Since 2002, MRHD has funded operation of the Riverfront Center. MRHD was formed in 1989 when Woodbury County voters approved a referendum that sanctioned riverboat gambling. A second referendum passed by 75% in 2002. A third passed by more than 75% in 2010. News brief. South Dakota authorities probing Clay County, South Dakota, vehicle fire and death. State and local authorities are investigating a vehicle fire and death discovered Tuesday in rural Clay County. A news release from the South Dakota Division of Criminal Investigation gave no other details about the discovery, where the vehicle was located, or how many victims were involved. The DCI said there is no threat to the public and no suspects are being sought. The Clay County Sheriff's Office said no more information would be released at this time, and a DCI spokesman says the agency does not comment on ongoing investigations. There's not a lot of local news stories today, everybody, so we're going to go ahead and turn to sports. This first article is by Shane Lance of the Journal. Carter Blyle's Mad Dash lifts Woodbury Central to extra innings win. Hinton, Iowa. In the most important moment of the game, the Wildcats turned to their best player, and he delivered. Blyle finished the night with three hits, a single, a double, and a triple, in the Wildcats' 12-11 victory over Hinton. Blyle scored the eventual winning run in the top of the 10th inning as he came from second base on a fly ball to center field from sophomore teammate Will Distichter. Blyle broke toward third base on the fly ball, and then sprinted toward home when the throw from Hinton center fielder Carter Warden sailed over the third baseman's head. In the bottom of the 10th, freshman pitcher Eric McGill allowed a single and a walk, but struck out Blackhawks catcher Dylan Hartman to end the game. The scoring play in the top of the 10th was a perfect example of what Blyle brings to the team, said Woodbury County Central coach Andy Compton. He's a very talented kid. It's just him being a good competitor. He wants to win. I think that is what puts him up there with a lot of guys, Compton said. It's just refusing to lose and taking whatever advantage we can get. I had him held up, but he saw it and reacted to it. That is him refusing to lose. While Compton put up the stop sign, it seemed that nothing was going to stop Blyle from scoring. With the game nearing the three-hour mark, he wanted the game to be over. I'm going to be honest, I didn't see the stop sign, Blyle said. Good thing I was safe, or I would have had to run a lot, probably tomorrow at practice. I was trying to make something happen. Our bats were hot, but I was trying to make something happen because it was getting pretty late. Blyle is in his fourth year as a starter for the Wildcats, having first broken into the lineup as an eighth grader. That season, he hit .425 with 36 RBI and 34 base hits. In his freshman year of 2019, he hit .245 with 27 base hits and 17 RBI. Last year, as a junior, he hit .447 and drove in a team-high 19 RBI in the team's abbreviated 16-game season. This season, Blail has exploded at the plate. Going into Tuesday's game, he was hitting .500, with a .603 on-base percentage, a .714 slugging percentage, and a team-high 25 RBI. On Tuesday, Blail struck out his first at-bat, but hit a third-inning single and later scored on a hit by Dusty Turner. In the fifth, he drove two runs with a triple, then walked and scored in the Wildcats' big sixth inning. When the hits came as easily as they have to Blail this season, the game is pretty easy to love. "I'm just having a lot of fun playing baseball," Blail said. "It's my favorite sport. So I just come out here, make sure I have fun and do the right things, and the baseball gods will do good things for me too." Free from the shackles of the COVID-shortened 2020 season, Blail and his Woodbury Central teammates are having a blast. The team has now won 5 consecutive games and sit in second place in the Western Valley standings with a 13-6 overall record, behind only Kingsley Pearson, currently 18-2. For Blail, the squad's close-knit atmosphere is a big reason they have had so much success this season. That and their potent offense. As a team, the Wildcats are hitting .372, which ranks 6th best in the state, regardless of class. The team's .493 on-base percentage is Iowa's 7th highest mark, and the team had driven in 154 total RBI prior to Tuesday's game. "All of us out here just have so much fun together," Blail said. "We all have the best bond of any team that I've been on. The team just makes it so much fun. I look forward to going to practice or a game every day." After the thrilling one-run win, Blail said that Tuesday's game was his favorite of the season so far. "It had everything. Multiple late-game lead changes, plenty of big-time strikeouts, some sparkling defense, and a game-clinching play that brought the visiting crowd to its feet. This was definitely the most exciting win of the season, if not my high school career so far," Blail said. "I still have a lot of nerves and excitement from that last run." Woodbury Central will play again on Wednesday at OABCIG. Hinton, which fell to 11-6 with the loss, will play its next game on June 30th against Galen Catholic. Siouxland Athlete of the Week, MVAOCOU's Brady Sontjens, studies the game and is among state strikeout leaders. I'm going to spell his last name, you all. I hope I'm pronouncing it right. It's spelled Seuntjens. Brady Sontjens spent Sunday sitting inside the TD Ameritrade Park in Omaha predicting what pitches were being thrown during the College World Series. He's a student of the game, and that has helped the MVAOCOU high school senior both on and off the baseball field. Sontjens has used the knowledge on the mound, and through it, the Rams ace is the top 10 among strikeout leaders statewide. Sontjens was slated to take the mound on Wednesday night against Westwood, and he entered the game with 61 strikeouts over 35 innings. That was good for a three-way tie for 6th place in strikeouts among Iowa pitchers. Sontjens is only 8 strikeouts behind Kyoto junior Colton Clareham, who leads the state in strikeouts. With his 61 strikeouts, Sontjens is this week's Siouxland Athlete of the Week. He collected 19 strikeouts last week in 2 starts. "My coaches are calling great pitchers, and my catcher, TJ Nutt, has been doing a great job," Sontjens said. "He's framing everything great, and I'm just throwing what they're telling me to. I've been working on it for a long time. I took pride in locating a lot better." When Sontjens watches a game, Whether it's at the College World Series or even a high school game, he likes to get there early and watch infield. For example, when Tennessee and Virginia warmed up Saturday afternoon, Sonjin wanted to see how they could handle the moment and not make little mistakes and do the little things perfectly. During the game, he'll take a look at how pitchers gripped the ball, how much movement it had, and how much it was spinning. Sonjin said he was accurate with his pitch predictions. It got to the point that he was starting to annoy the two friends who went to the College World Series with him. "You can get into the game that way," Sonjin said. "It's really fun. Even if you're not playing, you can find out what's working for them. Where that pitch should go, what did this hitter do last inning? You pick up a lot of things after years of playing it. I feel like I can guess them a fair amount of time, depending on the count," Sonjin added. Sonjin doesn't emulate his game off of one specific Major League Baseball pitcher, but he said he watches baseball-based shows every morning. "They do a lot of breakdowns, and I'm seeing if there are any new drills that they're trying," Sonjin said. I love looking at these little differences that the players are making. I love picking up on those small things." Rams coach Dan Doherty noticed Sonjin's keen ability to notice the small things that not many other high school players can. That helps him on the mound, of course. "He's a smart kid. He watches pro and college baseball," Doherty said. "Most kids can't tell you what pitch is coming. They can't tell you what it is. He can pick you up on those things. That's where it's fun for him to see, as a senior, see him coming through." Doherty also said that Sonjin brings a bulldog mentality to the Rams, which is something they didn't have in 2020. The Rams just won only one game in 2020, but they were in several one-run games that Doherty admitted they could have won. The Rams just weren't themselves last season, but Sonjin has brought that mentality back to an MVACOU team with a 6-6 record entering Wednesday's contest against the Rebels. "That's what you want," Doherty said. "I think Brady deserves a ton of credit. The big thing was we had to do the things that we can control and let go of the other stuff. This past week, we beat a good OABCIG team. We beat Ridgeview, which has been playing pretty well." Sonjin has also played well at the plate, leading the Rams with a .421 batting average and 11 RBIs. Prep softball, I'll give you some scores. North 6-1, Bishop Heelan 5-9, Sergeant Bluff Luton 8-10, CB Jefferson 0-3, Sioux Center 10, Unity Christian 0, Kingsley Pearson 12, MVAOCOU 4, Ridgeview 6, Westwood 5, West Monona 15, OABCIG 2. In prep baseball, Bishop Heelan 13-16, North 0-1, East 10-3, West 1-1, Storm Lake 4, Algona 3. And that brings us to the halfway point for reading the Sioux City Journal on Thursday, June 24th. You're listening to the Sioux City Journal reading on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's turn to today's obituaries. From Whiting, Iowa, Mark James Beggenbush, age 72, passed away Tuesday, June 22nd, at a local hospital surrounded by his family. Service will be at 10 a.m. on Saturday at the First Congregational Church, UCC, in Whiting, with Jeff Thielander officiating. Burial will follow in the Whiting City Cemetery. Visitation will be from 6 to 8 p.m. on Friday at the Rush Family Chapel in Onawa, Iowa, with a time of remembrance at 7 p.m. Arrangements are under the direction of Rush Family Care Service of Onawa. Condolences may be left online for the family. Mark James Feigenbusch was born in Onawa on March 5, 1949. The son of Jules and Phyllis Miller Feigenbusch. Mark was a lifelong resident of Whiting. He graduated from Whiting High School in 1967. He married Bonnie Cool at St. John's Catholic Church on Anawa on May 20, 1983. Mark always reminded Bonnie that he was the love of her life and the light of her day. Mark and Bonnie were happily married for 38 years. They were blessed with a son and three children, Matthew, Scott, and Beth, from Mark's previous marriage. Mark was a local farmer and a regional semi-driver. After Mark retired, he enjoyed hauling grain for local farmers. His favorite spring and fall activity was farming with his son, Scott. Mark loved camping, hosting 4th of July celebrations, caring for his lawn, and was happiest when he was with his family. Mark was known for his quick jokes, big laugh, and leaving everyone feeling just a bit happier. From Sioux City, Iona Linda Geiger. Iona Linda Geiger, age 67, died Friday, June 18th at St. Mary's Hospital in Rochester, Minnesota. Per her wishes, cremation has taken place. Linda was born on March 18, 1954, and was raised on the family farm near Waterbury, Nebraska, the daughter of Albert and Ione Horn Adams. She attended a one-room schoolhouse until it closed. Then she attended Allen Consolidated Schools, where she met her future husband, Jerry Ben Geiger. Both graduated in 1972. Jerry and Linda married on December 30, 1972. The couple made their home in Sioux City for the past 30 years. They have served together as Jehovah's Witnesses since 1980. From Whiting R., Iowa, Wayne R. Mitchell, age 94, died Thursday, June 17th. Services June 24th at 10:30 a.m., Hornick United Methodist Church in Hornick. Burial after the service, Willow Cemetery, Holly Springs, Iowa, with military honors. Visitation was held on June 23rd from 5 to 8 p.m. at the church. Arrangements are with Rush Family Care Service in Anawa. From Sioux City, Ma Herculana Jaquez Falcon, age 83, died Monday, June 21st. Services June 26th at 10 a.m., Cathedral of the Epiphany, burial in Mexico. Arrangements are with Waterbury Funeral Service of Sioux City. From Spencer, Iowa, Jeffrey Duane Mart, age 64, died July 8, 2020. Celebration of life June 25th from 6 to 9 p.m., Oneota Park Lodge in Spencer. From Sioux City, Laverna Mullen. With her family at her side, Laverna Mullen, age 95, of Sioux City, breathed her last on March 23rd. A mass to celebrate her life will be held 10 a.m. Saturday, June 26th, at Immaculate Conception Church, followed by interment in Calvary Cemetery. Visitation will begin 4 p.m. Friday, June 25th, with a prayer vigil at 6 p.m. and a rosary at 7 p.m. at Waterbury Funeral Service in Sioux City. Laverna was born August 6, 1925, to Frank and Mary Schmidt Potts in Menominee, Nebraska, the second of six children. On Easter Day in 1950, while visiting the Avalon Ballroom with friends, Rusty Mullen asked her for a dance. They fell in love and were married at the Cathedral of the Epiphany Catholic Church on November 10, 1951. Together they raised five children at their home next door to Immaculate Conception Church. From Sioux City, Gary W. Stevenson, age 83, passed away on Thursday, February 4th. A memorial reception is being hosted by the Siouxland Bank for family, friends, and colleagues. The reception will be from 4:30 to 5:30 p.m. on Tuesday in the Siouxland Bank lobby, located at 1001 West 29th Street in South Sioux City. From Sioux City, Linda Marie Ahn, age 75, died Monday, June 21st. Services, June 25th at 11 a.m., Meyer Brothers Morningside Chapel. Burial, Graceland Cemetery. Visitation, June 24th from 5 to 7 p.m. at the funeral home. Kingsley, Iowa. Marion E. Graham, age 86, died Tuesday, June 22nd. Services, June 26th at 11 a.m., Kingsley Congregational Church, Kingsley, Iowa. Visitation, June 25th from 5 to 7 p.m., Rhody Funeral Home in Kingsley. From Anawa, Iowa, Ruth L. Cosgrove, age 93, died Sunday, June 20th. Graveside services are private at the Belvedere Cemetery in Turin, Iowa. Arrangements are with Rush Family Care Service in Anawa. From Omaha, Nebraska, formerly of Sioux City, Russell J. Messerly, Jr., age 63, died Sunday, June 20th. Graveside services, June 25th at 1 p.m., Memorial Park Cemetery. Arrangements with Meyer Brothers, Morningside Chapel. And that concludes today's obituaries. The Weekender this Thursday is full of pages and pages about this year's Saturdays in the Park celebration. Here's the first article in a lot of articles about Saturdays in the Park, and it's by Earl Horlick. He writes, "Test your Saturday in the Park trivia knowledge. Want to make someone feel incredibly old? Tell them that 1991 was the year the Soviet Union officially dissolved. The post stamp went from costing 25 cents to 29 cents. And the very first Saturday in the Park was held at Grandview Park. For 30 Independence Day weekends, SITP has brought legendary performers, critically acclaimed darlings, up-and-coming groups, and regional royalty to light up Sioux City's historic bandshell in a free music festival. Given it has such an illustrious history, here are 11 things that every SITP aficionado must know. Who headlined the first SITP? Answer. Blues musician Clarence Gatemouth Brown had the honors. Other 1991 acts included Bad Manners, Buckwheat Zydeco, and the Table Rockers. Some repeated acts included the Neville Brothers, Rod Piazza and the Mighty Flyers, and Santana, trombone shorty, will make his second appearance at this year's SITP. He was here with Orleans Avenue in 2017. What royalty has been to SITP? Answer. Aretha Franklin, the Queen of Soul, was here in 2015, and Tito Puente, who is a member of King of the Mambo, graced us with his presence in 1996. B.B. King held court here in 2007. Who has had the most SITP encores? Winnebago, Nebraska-based blues singer Kurt St. Cyr, who has performed at the festival at least 8 times between 91 and 2005. Does SITP run in the family? In 1997, Rita Marley and her Maccabee Band played SITP. Her son Ziggy Marley, along with the Melody Makers, played the festival in 1999 and 2014. The Allman Brothers Band with Greg Allman was here in 2000. Greg's son Devin Allman was here with the Honey Tribe in 2006. Which places on the map were represented? The Taj Mahal in 1996, the North Mississippi All-Stars in 2015, Bangkok Rooster in 1994, and the Michigan Rattlers in 2019. Special mention, Flo Rida in 2019. What Woodstock alumni came to SITP? That would be Santana, 94 and 2010, as well as John Fogerty, who is playing this year's SITP. What animals have been represented at SITP? The Black Crows, the Counting Crows, Garrett Possum Judice, Rat Dog, the Sharks, and the Brian Seltzer Orchestra, formerly known as the Stray Cats. Who were some space-related performers at SITP? Galactic, Laser Rocket Arm, and Blue Moon. Okay, here's a column written by Dave Bernstein, who's producer of SITP. These are his comments about it. He writes, "Who could have ever imagined that what happened was going to happen? A bit over 1 year ago, we were canceling SITP's 30th anniversary festival. In 29 years, we encountered so many challenges, but never one that came remotely close to canceling. I don't want to belabor this point, except to acknowledge that the last 18 months left all, or at least most of us, with a completely new outlook on life, new perspectives, and at least for me, a significantly greater appreciation for so many people and things I love, including just the ability to be able to present a festival like Saturday in the Park. What did I miss the most about the last year, you might ask? Working with our committee, I have come to realize that we have such an amazing, close-knit bond, just like a family, and going a year without being able to get in the trenches with everything was really sad, and I really missed it. That being said, I know they were there every step of the way, from initial planning last spring to cancellation, and that brutal Zoom press conference where so many committee members were online to hear the news for themselves firsthand, even though they all knew it was coming, one of the most gut-wrenching moments of my life. It was a collective bummer for all of us, as so many cancellations were for everyone in our community and the world last year. We, after all, are a society that loves to connect and gather at times in very large groups to hear really awesome music performed live and for free. And to that end, not experiencing that last year was really sad, but also will make our pending return that much sweeter. The last year represented great loss for so many of us, much unrelated to COVID. For me, knowing my friends Danny Hasha, who loved John Fogerty, Cherie Henson, and Paul Frank won't be able to attend SITP this year is incredibly sad. For our SITP family, not having Bob Cannon in the volunteer tent flipping burgers or Kurt St. Cyr performing at our 30th fest fills us with sorrow. We all experienced much loss over the past 18 months on many different levels, and we'll be thinking of all who are no longer with us as we get back out there and do what they all loved so much. If nothing else, we owe it to those not only who are gone, but those who worked so hard to keep us safe over the past 18 months, to carry on so this year's fest is a tribute to them. 30 years is a long time. Much has changed, but so much stays the same. Somehow we have survived as a festival. Upon reflection on the subject, the main reason I can think of is community. Our community cherishes SITP and events and gatherings like it. Sure, it wouldn't have happened without the aid of many individuals, but without the support of our community, it would not have survived. This starts with our committee, of course, and our sponsors who foot the bill for this craziness yearly and keep it free. Free is no small point, and probably why we have endured, and without the sponsors, that wouldn't happen. Our city government gives us great support as well, and has since day one, when Joanne Gruskin and Judy Nichols shepherded us through the inner workings of City Hall. So many local businesses and individuals drop everything to help us, to volunteer, to lend a hand however they can. Without community, however, we wouldn't have lasted the 5 years, let alone 30 to 31 years. So that brings us to this year. So much will be different. A new location for the amazing Abe stage. A fenced-off park with no beer gardens, but instead one big one, a family-friendly zone with no beer. 2 nights. Lots of changes for an event coming off of an enforced hiatus. John Fogerty was slated to perform last year, and we are so grateful he hung with us and will close Saturday night. AJR will be amazing Friday, a fantastic group with awesome young appeal that will keep us fresh and relevant by continuing to help us build a new fan base for SITP. And the Abe, with its amazing lineup of headliners as well, will keep us more relevant today than we were 30 years ago. This year's theme at SITP will be Respect. Many months ago, we announced a number of safeguards we were going to implement to be able to produce a festival this year and still be respectful of the need to protect public health and respect the incredibly hard work of our community's public health officials. We have continued to evolve those safeguards, but still request the utmost respect for all involved, starting with our planning committee and producers of the festival this year. We have strived to strike a balance that works for as many as possible, realizing that it won't work for everyone. Whether you are vaccinated or not, want to wear a mask or not, like rock or rap, blues or hip-hop, men or women, turkey legs or pizza, we just ask that you respect everyone at Saturday in the Park in the same way you would want to be respected. A simple ask, we know, and one that is obvious and not a problem for loyal SITP attendees, for sure, without question. In closing, personally, I'd like to just say thank you. Thanks for sticking with us through so much and showing up every year. Thank you to the Sioux City Committee for giving this 1,000% every year. And no matter how hard it gets, always looking back the day after with pride and laughter. Thank you to Dee and George for pouring so much into this day, in and out. Thank you to all my friends and family who deal with a lot of emotions and short fuses from me around this time of year for the last few decades. And thank you to you all for your respect and tolerance this year as we forge new ground. When Adam, Tom, and I sat around dreaming this thing up decades ago, we never imagined the present festival as it exists. That being said, I can't think of a more fitting way to bring us out of COVID than SITP. And to that point, I must say it's an honor and also great responsibility to be entrusted to be able to produce an event that I hope has the collective impact that I believe this year's festival will have. We are beyond ready to get back out there and gather and enjoy great live music. I can't wait to see you on July 2nd and 3rd. And as pumped as you are to be there, I promise you I will be more pumped that we could welcome you all back to Grandview Park. See you soon. Now, before you go, ride the bus. We try to think of everything to make your SITP experience the best. One of the ways we do this is to offer you a hassle-free way to attend without dealing with the frustration of finding a parking spot within a square mile of the beautiful Grandview Park. Feel spoiled by being chauffeured to the event by a nice driver in a very nice Sioux City bus as you and yours are comfortably swaying back and forth in the bus singing The Wheels in the Bus in 8-part harmony. Park at the Tyson Event Center, 401 Gordon Drive, and get picked up at the fountain area. You can even get a ride back after having more fun than any of us deserves to have. Shuttle buses will begin at 4 p.m. Friday and 1:30 p.m. Saturday. They will run throughout the day and evening until the festival ends. Masks must be worn on the shuttle per federal regulations. Seating capacity is limited, and we ask for your cooperation and patience as waiting times may be longer. Shuttle costs each way are adults $1.80, senior citizen or disabled 90 cents, youth fare $1.55, children under 5, accompanied by an adult, of course, are free. Have fun, ride the bus, be safe, be thankful, and may peace be on your journey. It's easy being green at SITP. While your neighbor on one blanket over may seem a little trashy, that is still no excuse to throw your garbage in their direction. Take the time to dispose of your garbage properly. Help out the small army of volunteers who clean the park after the festival by throwing your trash away in the appropriate recycling and garbage bins throughout the park. You won't have any trouble finding them, as there are about 350 containers that can be found around the park. Thank you for your earthly consideration. Refill your water bottle at SITP. The Hard Rock Hotel and Casino's Saturday in the Park Festival will this year feature water bottle refilling stations. The stations will eliminate plastic bottle waste. Yay! And encourage hydration, giving patrons a healthy, environmentally friendly way to enjoy this year's festival. Event goers are invited to bring their own water bottles to the park. Cash for the day section. If you were silly enough to forget your wad of cash at home, then the ATMs will surely quell your worries of having to leave the park. Machines will be located in the merchandise tent and in the Abe stage area, so don't think for a second that we don't have you covered. Of course, we recommend that you bring cash to the event, but we couldn't collect the convenience fee. We're trying to keep you prepared, especially since an ATM will be located next to the merchandise tent. Plus, you never know what you may find from the vendors in Arts Alley. Grab a cold one and enjoy the SITP festival in style. Here's what you need to know about beer this year. No BYOB. Please respect that. This is a free festival made possible in part by beer sales. No alcoholic beverages are allowed to be brought into the park. Supporting the sales provides a lineup like we have this year. The price is right. Buy tickets for $25. Individual tickets cost $6. And we will have a beer to suit almost every taste profile for your enjoyment. It isn't often that a festival offers a selection of over a dozen brands and styles, from high-end craft choices to the most popular domestic brews. All beers will be sold as packaged beers. That means cans. Brands available include just about everyone you might find in a regular liquor store. Make sure that you are at least 21 before you drink, because only then will you be able to drink all of those adult beverages. No exceptions. You must be 21. New this year, the park will be totally fenced in with three entrances, so there will not be a fenced-in beer garden. Beer will be able to be consumed throughout the park, excluding the kids' zone and the family-friendly area. There will be four beer stations available to purchase adult beverages. These beverage stations will be named for their locations: Earl's, Main Trailer near Water Tower, Abe's near the Abe Stage, Bob's, north side of the bandshell, and Pete's, south side of the bandshell. Don't want to leave your spot? Beer hawkers will be weaving in and out of the crowd to bring you a beverage. Note, the hawkers will be trading in cash only, so keep currency available. Here's some information about the Kids Zone at SITP. The Kids Zone hours will be from 2 to 7 p.m. on Saturday, July 3rd. Kids Zone wristband pricing all day is $10. Wristbands sales end at 7 p.m. Don't forget to have your little ones wear socks. Sometimes the inflatables can get warm on the bottom of their little feet. This year's Kids Zone will be packed full of entertainments, inflatables, food vendors, and activities to keep kids of all ages busy all day. There will be guest weather with KCAU-TV. Join meteorologist Scott Larson for your opportunity to forecast the weather at Saturday in the park. It's your chance to get in front of the camera and tell us if it's going to be sunny, rainy, or maybe even a chance of snow. Stop by the KCAU-9 tent between noon and 4 p.m. and have your forecast recorded. Norm Waite, Senior YMCA, will be there with a variety of fun-filled activities. Kids as little as 3 will be able to make their way through our sports themes obstacles course to burn off some much-needed energy. We will also have information through our Whale's Tales water safety curriculum. Stop by, learn some, and fish for a prize. And if water or sports are not your thing, don't worry, we have you covered. Come and make your very own craft with our Y Club staff, or for $5 you can make your own tie-dyed t-shirt. A popular performer in the KCAU Kids Zone every year, Mr. Twister, is back once again armed with fun and balloons. For the past 18 years, Mr. Twister has entertained children at Saturday in the Park with his wacky assortment of balloons. Make sure to bring the young ones up to visit Mr. Twister and ask for a free crazy balloon sculpture. And the inflatables. This year's Kids Zone will feature inflatables to entertain kids of all ages all day long. There will be old favorites such as the Eurobungee, obstacle courses, and a bounce house. Be sure to step up to the Kids Zone and check out all the attractions, Inflatables will be open until 7 p.m. Main stage showtimes. Friday, 5 p.m., the National Anthem with Phil Klaes. 5:45 p.m., Ghost Cat. 7 p.m., Wiz the Mick. 8:45 p.m., AJR. Saturday, 2 p.m., National Anthem. 2:05 p.m., Ultraviolet Fever. 3 p.m., CTA. 5 p.m., Valerie June. 6:30 p.m., Trombone Shorty. And 9 p.m., John Fogerty. Here's the Abe stage lineup. On Friday, July 2nd, Dane Lewis, who is a country singer-songwriter from Sioux City. Lewis, whose musical influences include John Mellencamp and Eric Church, describes his music as grittier than what is heard on the radio now. His first studio album released was Lone Pine in 2019. This year, he released his EP, Heartaches and Harlots. The Electric Animals will play at 6 p.m. They are an alternative rock band from Denver. Their sound is a tasteful mix of 90s garage rock, classic blues, smooth alternative indie rock, and a sprinkling of post-grunge. They burst onto the Denver scene in early 2018 with the singles Obsessive and Cool Common Collected. At 7:20 p.m., there will be Heatbox. It's a Minneapolis-based funky beatboxing loop artist, video game host, voiceover actor, and computer programmer. He has performed with or in front of many of the world's biggest musical acts and wowed crowds on some of the biggest stages and talent shows. Well, all we have made it through today's Sioux City Journal. You have been listening to volunteer reader Amy B., and you can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. Thanks for listening.